Hello, and welcome to Paranormal is Normal. This is Richard Allibone with webtalkradio.net, and this week it's all about how and why the paranormal is faked and phony. It's done for entertainment, or for money, and because people know that there is something real about the paranormal that they're very keen to learn more. They spend time and money trying to find out what it's all about. And because of all the misinformation and trickery, they are never able to get to the truth. There are so many ways that the paranormal is exaggerated or invented that the whole business is treated like a joke. Today I'm going to into details and into some of the ways that people are fooled. Later in my show I'll talk about why people fake paranormal experiences, followed by examples of faking and paranormal to prove something. So let's start with the oldest form of misinformation known to man, that is books. Writers of novels often introduce a paranormal topic into their book, taking great care to see that it's as correct and plausible as possible, but other writers bend the truth and fabricate just to make a good story, and people lap it up. Then there are books of ghost stories, or books about ancient civilizations from some distant star with genuine looking photographs. The possibilities are endless, and they make good reading and good money for the author, so he's easily persuaded to write a similar book with even more misleading stories and photographs. And even though we know that this is the case, we still buy the books. But some authors do go to great lengths to ensure that they only publish plausible paranormal stories, which is fine. The trouble is, we cannot tell truth from fiction. Then, of course, there are specialist magazines that print incredible rubbish by writers who get paid by the page, who invent amazing information that the readers get taken in by. When it comes to films, television, or radio, or dare I say, even the internet nowadays, the stories are just the same, and just as misleading. It seems we can't get enough of it, and this is because we know there is something, some truth in it. It's not all make-believe. But the ones that really upset me are films of a ghost hunter supposedly examining haunted houses. Generally, a real psychic is bribed or conned into helping the program makers take film in the dark with night vision cameras with strange things going on, noises, things that move inexplicably, or messages on tape recordings or written on the wall. It's all very mysterious, exciting and emotional, but highly unlikely, just the sort of thing that makes good entertainment. That's all it is, entertainment. But it does sometimes get people interested enough to start studying to see what the real evidence is. So the entertainment is not all bad, and some people will go on to realize that all ghost experiences and feelings are telepathic recordings. What happens is that past emotion becomes trapped in the quartz of a building to be released later as a telepathic emotion. And this can trigger a hallucination known as a ghost. A sensitive person may then retransmit by telepathy, making the whole thing self-perpetuating. To move on now, many believe in the power of healing, which is generally done with the laying on of hands. This works by a combination of self-hypnosis and a sixth sense of the healer, who is able to administer some telepathic power. With spiritual healing, the power is said to come from somewhere else. But there's nothing wrong with that. In the UK, we're a reserved lot here. We don't like the physical contact with laying on of hands. So many healers keep their hands a few inches away. But this does not interfere with their telepathic powers. Remote healing is just a possibility where there can be some emotional relationship. But that's obviously difficult. It's things like email healing, where there is no emotion, and that is where the fakery comes in. People part with their money, and there could be healing by a placebo effect, but they are unlikely to admit that there was no effect, so it continues to be easy money for a respected healer, which of course leaves the field open for charlatans, and that's very sad. When it comes to psychic mediums who use tarot cards, palmistry, or an old-fashioned glass ball to obtain evidence of their telepathic powers, that's fine. But most go on to predict the future, which can only be fakery, except where hopes are picked up and then given as a prediction which might well be fulfilled. Now, people spend money to be entertained by a stage hypnotist. If they are unwise, they might go up on stage and they might be hypnotized and suffer the consequences. But these shows do make fascinating entertainment. The fakery comes in where the hypnotist has a helper who pretends to be hypnotized, doing silly things, so that these people on stage follow his example and become properly hypnotized. Many people are interested in astrology and follow their stars every day in the newspaper. It may help the sales of newspapers, but it doesn't give any information about the future. While the planets certainly do affect our lives in a very strange and obscure way, the sun sign used by popular astrologers has absolutely nothing to do with it. So the information has to be suspect, to say the least. Another similar thing is the explanation of dreams. Whereas there is a perfectly reasonable explanation for our dreams, which most people don't know of, they can buy books giving explanations of dreams which are not based on the scientific evidence of dreaming. Furthermore, these books go on to give predictions based on your dreams, which can be no more than make-believe. But some people buy them. So, all this has been examples of the fakery associated with trance and telepathy. Now, in this section, I'm going to discuss why people fake paranormal happenings. As I see it, there are five reasons. Financial, then to predict the future, 3, to give evidence of the afterlife, 4, pure entertainment, and lastly, scientific fakery to boost the esteem of a scientist. Firstly then, financial. Books have always been a good source of paranormal fakery. The more way out the ideas or pictures, the more people buy them. One popular magazine I've seen is full of strange paranormal articles. Writers are paid to write long screeds about something paranormal, which is mainly all make-believe, nothing to do with the paranormal. Then, of course, there are radio programs, television and films, all financially driven, and programs have to introduce popular topics. dramas very often have paranormal backgrounds of hauntings or ghosts or whatever. But the worst things, I think, are where they have programs about hauntings and ghosts, where an investigator goes to an old building, supposedly haunted house or castle, and the psychics have to pretend to experience a ghost. The film crew make noises and lights and smells and cold, and they have to, and the psychics have to go along with this. But it's all make-believe. The possibilities are endless for this sort of thing, all driven by program ratings and, in the event, money. Then the next reason for faking is the predicting of the future. People like to think that they go to a psychic or medium who can tell them what's going to happen in the future. We have astrology, palmistry, psychic mediumship, and they especially the psychic mediumship people, they make use of a globe or tarot cards, and all may well produce evidence of something personal to gain the sitter's confidence using telepathy. But then they go on to predict the future, which again is all make-believe, but it could be based on the sitter's hope for the future, which the medium may be able to pick up. The third reason for fake paranormal is to give evidence of the afterlife. Many times I've seen a good medium giving evidence for survival by telepathy, tuning in to some personal details of the sitter's life, which the sitter will then decide is evidence for survival. But, and this is a big but, too many phony mediums are about, and they have no ability whatsoever. They're good at fishing for information. In fact, they're trained that way, to fish for information. But some people will be convinced that it's evidence for survival, and they will hand over some money. Okay, let's move on to fakery number four, which is pure entertainment. Stage hypnosis, very funny, but it can be dangerous, as people do get hypnotized. Faking is done by an assistant to the main hypnotist, and he helps with making people laugh and doing crazy things, which is essential to the hypnotist, because the laughter great inducer of hypnotism. But the trouble is that this danger can be very bad. We once had a lodger who went to a hypnosis show, and he had no recollection of his antics when he came back. But that night he was found in our bedroom by my wife, sleepwalking, fumbling about. He had no idea where he was or what he was doing. He could have fallen down the stairs or developed a psychosis. Fortunately, he got over it after a day or two. He was a bit slow-witted for a couple of days. But after the event, my wife led him back to bed, and he had no memory whatsoever. Another form of entertainment is the psychic show. I went to one once to see a psychic. He was performing telepathy, which could have been faked, but perhaps it wasn't. But one of the things he said he could do was to mend watches by paranormal ability. He collected broken watches from members of the public and put them in a cardboard box, which he put at the back of the stage. And later in the show, he said, "Well, I think those watches will be mended now," and he collected the box from behind a desk, and the watches were mended. But of course, it was a different box. Just a simple conjuring trick, and he got away with it. Most people didn't realise at all. And he also would perform sleight of hand tricks, claiming that they were paranormal. Now, my last group of fakery is scientists who do these things to boost their self-esteem. They suggest highly unlikely ideas to show how the paranormal works. They might suggest that time moves backwards as well as forwards. They invoke quantum physics and other worlds and all sorts of crazy ideas, but other scientists may well invent fake scientific equipment that can't possibly work for measuring and detecting paranormal events, dubious little black boxes. One of them, one of these things that I invented, I think is known as EVP, electronic voice phenomena, where a tape recorder is taken to a site where there's supposed to be ghosts and things, and there are strange mumbling messages and faint messages right down in the noise on the tape, sometimes at the wrong speed. All highly unlikely, I suggest. So now I'm going to give you examples of faking the paranormal to prove something. Firstly, we rely on the truthfulness of results by parapsychologists and scientists to be reliable and accurate. But there have been a few instances where unconscious or conscious cheating have crept in to prove a point. As with all science, we have to rely on peer review, repeated results, and falsification to show up unreliable work, which has proved its worth in a few cases in parapsychology. Another source of disinformation is put out by the paranormal skeptics. Not unreasonably, they believe that telepathy can't happen, therefore it doesn't happen. So they debunk anything that shows the opposite. Any advice or test giving a positive result for telepathy is explained away by false reasoning and veriferous argument, which can be seen to be unscientific fakery. In order to prove their point, faked paranormal arguments are presented, which the media are quick to promote. One area of paranormal cheating, of which I have had a personal experience, involves a religious practice where a priest gives a hand-on blessing which causes the person to fall over in trance. This is a thing commonly seen in charismatic rallies, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the person concerned is overcome by a religious conviction or power. I've seen a lady who found herself sitting in the aisle of her church, looking rather foolish and bewildered, having been blessed in this way. I recall a Bible reading in my own home, led by the father and his helper, where personal blessings were given to the people present. When it came to my turn, the father put his hands on my shoulders and the helper, who was standing close beside me, put his foot behind my heels. By quickly lifting one foot over his and behind me, I was able to steady myself from a couple of pushes by the father, which were obviously intended to overbalance me, with the helper there to break my fall. The priest exchanged surprised glances with the helper after this, and then completed the blessing, and that was the end of the matter, and it was even the end of the Bible readings at my home. So don't be fooled, that charismatic practice is faked. On the other hand, all churches are aware that members may have a mystical experience at some time, generally when in prayer, and they're sometimes keen to talk of that wonderful experience. But of course, people will pretend to have had the experience, and as the church has no proof, they adopt a neutral attitude and say that by your deeds you will be judged. To change the subject, I once visited a popular psychic researcher and writer in the Philippines, who was at pains to impress me with his abilities. He showed me a man about a foot high, made out of paper and sellotape, and told me he would make it walk. Well, we sat on the floor, and he positioned the paper man very carefully and prepared to make it walk, urging it on with his hand, and in fact it did a step or two before falling over. This happened several times, before he thought I was suitably impressed, which of course I was. But afterwards I realised that there was a fan in the room, which there normally is in the Manila, and that his arm movements coincided with the walking movements of the doll. But I have to say that I didn't realise it at the time. His arm movements were clearly altering the airflow from the fan at the frequency at which the doll was likely to walk. So that was how that was supposed to work. Another parapsychologist set out to fool the world by showing how children could bend metal by their psychic powers or psychokinesis, which was all the craze at the time. That was about 40 years ago. What he did was to have glass globes made, about 4 inches diameter, with a little hole through which he put straightened out paper clips. The children were given these, and some turned the straight clips into scrunched up balls of bent paper clips, which were subsequently shown on television, and an official report was published in the SPR journal. Well, I thought about this and experimented with a bent knitting needle, which would go through the hole with a saw cut at the end, and this would just fit over the paperclip. Of course, it was easy to bend the straight clips into a ball inside the glass globe, and that was the last we heard of metal bending. I always wondered if the researcher, who was a respected scientist at a London university, gave the children a special knitting needle tool like I had made for myself. I never asked him, but perhaps I wouldn't have had a straight answer even if I had. To end with, I want to talk about spirit mediumship and telepathy. To most spiritualists, this is a completely taboo subject. But I did speak to the UK's leading medium, who told me, without any prompting, that he had always been telepathic with friends and family. To me, that was very significant, as his very successful mediumship seems to rely entirely on telepathy with the person involved, rather than any communication from spirits. I've watched his mediumship on about 30 occasions, and he always picks up on things which are likely to be received by telepathy. It's only the spiritualist movement that insists that telepathy is not involved. But if you look on the internet at First Spiritual Temple, who claim to be the oldest spiritualist church, started over 120 years ago, then they say this: mental mediumship involves the relating of information through communication via varied aspects of thought transference or mental telepathy. Mental telepathy is the relaying of information via thought without using any of the five physical senses. Mental mediumship takes place within the consciousness of the medium. The results are expressed verbally and must pass through the medium's mouth. Because of its telepathic nature, mental mediumship is sometimes referred to as telepathic mediumship. I have to say that this is said about telepathic channeling with a spirit communicator, although it might well be channeling telepathically with the subject. I'm well aware that this is a very vexed subject, and I would like to mention the famous medium in the United States, Eileen Garrett, who was a psychic researcher as well as a spirit medium. She was well aware of her natural telepathy, and submitted to a standard ESP test using Zener cards, which she failed. But then she realised that telepathy is all about emotion. So when she brought emotion into a Zenocard test, she had success. She was a medium, not afraid to use the word telepathy, and was even happy to have herself tested. She was also very honest about fakery in physical mediumship, and she wrote the following in an article about the ethics of mediumship. She said, "But it is necessary, I think, to point out without equivocation that public pressure for results is probably the singly most destructive factor in mediumship phenomena. We hear over and over again of seances that are clearly rigged, that smack of cheap stage magic, collusion and fakery." She wrote that in 1960, and that's 60 years ago, and little has changed, I'm afraid. So now we have faking in almost everything to do with the paranormal. Today I've tried to show that money is an important reason for much of this, but also individuals will fake the paranormal for various personal reasons. However, there can be no doubt that behind it all there is plenty of real evidence and an emerging science of trance and telepathy. Paranormal is normal. You may care to read my book, Sublimity, which is full of all the things which I've been speaking about this evening, and it's available on Amazon. I hope you've enjoyed this program on webtalkradio.net. And this is Richard Allibone signing off for this time. Thanks for listening.